You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Well, our world today largely about data, and the data is getting more intelligent, if I can say it that way. It's also getting much more productive, and it's all happening up in the cloud. So on that and so much more, we're so delighted to be here in Vegas at Informatica World 2022. And joining us right now is the CEO of Informatica. He's Amit Walia, excuse me. And you guys are all about cloud data. So great to be here. How are you?
Carol, good to be here. And Tim, welcome to Vegas.
Well, tell us about, like, there's just so much going on in this world, and I think we're trying to figure out kind of where we are in terms of the broader economy, the broader marketplace. How do you see it? Because you deal with so many customers that we cover on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah. We're a global company, so we see literally every customer across every industry vertical across the globe. I mean, there's a lot happening macro, and I think we can all, in some ways, almost sometimes you have to just completely immune yourself and not look at it. I think I come back. Whatever is happening in the current term will come and go. But the fundamental things that are changing is every enterprise has gone digital. Every enterprise is trying to become intelligent using AI.
Increasingly coming off the pandemic?
Coming off the pandemic. I mean, the two years of pandemic, just completely exponential growth in digital. And in fact, the point that we made is that digital is no more a differentiator. That's a given. How do you get intelligent? And for that, how do you become data-driven? And that's what we're all about. And that's what we're seeing increasing tailwinds and demand for that. Everybody wants to, like, hey, how do I harness the power of data I have to manage customer churn in an environment like this, manage supply chains, manage drug discoveries. Mm-hmm. So those become important, and without data, that would not have happened. And look, during the pandemic, the vaccine development happened in the shortest time possible. Why? And we were part of that process, bringing the best data, rapidly looking at trial data, getting inference out of it, so you can say, well, this vaccine makes sense to go out. That's what is happening, and that's what we see.
What specifically are you hearing from companies about the macroeconomic environment? And, you know, we get a good view of it, not just with the analysts we talk to, but with the CEOs we talk to, what we see from earnings reports. We're in the midst of earnings right now. We're starting to see inventory levels, for example, come up at retailers. They need the data to sort through those inventory levels to help understand what consumers are going to buy, when they're going to buy it, and control those levels. What are you hearing from customers about what's going on in the macroeconomic environment?
See, there are two things we're hearing. Number one is everybody is definitely, you know, cautious looking at the current economy. It kind of, okay, you know, it does give you what's going on. But at the same time, you know, we have so many great customers who spoke here. And I'll give you an example. American Airlines, during the middle of the pandemic in 2020, and they basically invested in our platform. And I'm like,
what are you doing?
The whole airline. But they realized that, look, ultimately, pandemic will be over. This macro will be over. When we come out, what do you need to do? Manage your customer experience better. How do you do it? Understand your data better. govern it better. I want to give it to every user across the enterprise. So I think that's what I'm hearing from customers, that things that are the data-related foundational things are here to stay. Now, you may stagger it, but you cannot avoid investing in it. But yes, the current macro does not get away from you. You got to look at that every day, and it gives you a little bit of caution. But these are fundamental things that you have to invest in.
Amit, you know what I think about? I always think about our investor audience, very smart audience, but they're trying to be like, okay, I understand we talk about data all the time. Mm-hmm. We talk about the cloud all the time. What is it that you think an investment audience has to understand about, you know, kind of the sophistication of data, how it's becoming more intelligent? Like, what does that mean, and what is the, you know, potential top and bottom line, especially for publicly held companies?
So I'll give you a couple examples. Today morning, I hosted a panel. We had three customers, you know, one from GE Digital, one from Freddie Mac, and one from Texas Health and Hospitals. And you know, and I'll give you other examples like Kroger and all. So Kroger is an example.
I just talked to their CEO.
There you go. So Kroger is an Informatica customer. And what they were using us for is, hey, how do I get the right product mm-hmm. at the right shelf at the right time? It has multiple benefits. It's a lost revenue opportunity that you want to avoid. Plus, also, if you get the wrong product on the right shelf, you're basically wastage, which means at more cost. And then you're managing a supply chain there, where if I'm a customer, I want gratification. So it really goes from revenue to cost to obviously managing customer expectations.
But weren't companies doing that before? Like, that to me is kind of mind-blowing. You would have thought that
you
was the norm.
You get better at it. See, if you look at a retailer, the margins are the thinnest, right? How do you manage your supply chain so you basically make sure that you're not losing products on the shelf at some point, right? If you get the right product, if you have, you know, perishable goods and you throw it away, that's cost. Or if you have an empty shelf, then you basically lost revenue. How do you get better at it? And how do you do more and more just in time? Look at the supply chain problem we're dealing with, right? You go to, on the other hand, healthcare is a huge thing in there. So when John was talking from Texas Health and Hospitals, right, how do they look at patient care to make sure that when somebody's coming in, they can provide the most personalized care in time for that? Reduces, again, the supply chain of healthcare cost, mm-hmm. but saves lives. So there are so many applications like that that we, when we talk to customers, that they apply data to.
One thing I wanted to, because Tim and I talked about coming off of Milken on the West Coast, we talked to a lot of companies, and they said even in a volatile environment where companies are thinking about costs and wondering about what's next, the tech spend is crucial. What can you tell us about you're seeing in terms of companies when it comes to capital expenditures, especially when it comes to tech in your world?
I think we are going to continue to see investment in critical areas of tech. I don't think that'll go away. And I think the areas of...
What's critical tech in your view?
Critical in me, what drives the P&L? Like what you began with. Mm-hmm. Hey, is it going to, depending upon the industry, is it going to help me drive revenues, or is it going to help me manage cost, or both? Ultimately, that's where it does. It's simple mm-hmm. P&L. As a CEO, I look at that. Where is my spend, and is it going to help me drive more revenues or manage my cost? And that's where, depending upon the industry, hey, I want to understand churn better. I understand acquisition better. Or, oh my gosh, I have huge amount of waste in my supply chain. How do I reduce that?
Right.
People are going to go invest in that kind of technologies versus nice to have, sidebar something, what if, that fluff is going to go away.
How are you thinking about the ownership of data as we are increasingly in a world where data points exist everywhere, sensors to pick up that data exist everywhere? What about from the perspective of a normal human being, mm-hmm. perhaps our investor audience, but also from the perspective of your customers? Where does the ownership conversation come in there?
That's the one that's changing a lot. So data is one of those things where it's across the entire enterprise, right? Take a large organization. Every functional unit has their data and they manage it for their own purpose, you know, or if I'm the CMO, I'm managing it for my own, you know, demand gen purposes, or if I'm the chief financial officer. But if you see the rise of the chief data officer, that's really happened. And, you know, CDOs also rose during the 2008 crisis more from a governance and compliance. Mm-hmm. And we've been working with the CDOs very diligently since then. In fact, we host CDO councils too. And that, if you watch, more and more and more companies now have CDOs. And from compliance-oriented roles, they've gone into more business-oriented roles. And they're going...
So in terms of strategy.
Strategy. So, hey, as a CEO, I like, okay, my functional units have the data, but I want to understand a customer sentiment across everything. You know, my customer support, my marketing data, my sales data. CDOs are becoming more and more important. And that is, by the way, a good indicator of data becoming more and more at the C-level.
Are there limits, though, geographically to what you can do when it comes to analyzing data for a customer who's based in Europe versus a customer based in the United States?
Yeah, I wouldn't use the limit. The word I would use is that there are differences. So you're right, like GDPR came along multiple years ago.
Right.
So I think in Europe and certain countries, there's more sensitivity to how you can use the data. Whereas in different countries, it may be less. So that is true.
Even different states like California.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the laws are coming up across the board. I kind of believe that that's going to be a new normal where we'll have to manage data, the privacy and the security of data while making sure. So what we see that gave rise to is governance. I mean, that's a huge vector of business growth. So here's what I hear from CIOs, CDOs, or CEOs. I want to democratize data, but I don't want it to be a Wild West. Mm. Govern it for me. So, and that's that we see that that has risen in the last couple of years, like very much. I want to create a data lake so everybody can go have at it.
A sharing of data.
Yes. So I want a one place. I want to democratize data, but don't make it the Wild West, because it may not be compliance. It may be brand issues if the wrong data goes into the hands of wrong users. I mean, look at the pharmaceutical industry.
Right.
I may be doing drug discovery, and I also am doing sales and marketing. You can put data together to understand, but different people should have access differently. That's what we see here a lot.
Well, we see that in the financial industry in terms of the division. Hey, listen, got a couple minutes left here. And I do wonder, you know, you were talking about supply chains and helping other companies and your clients manage that. When you look at some of the big macro issues, whether it's higher prices, supply chains, labor constraints, what's top of mind? What of those big macro issues are affecting you guys at Informatica?
You know, we obviously look at customers. Different industries end up operating differently. I look at, obviously, tech spend carefully. I look at business priorities very differently, which business priorities are getting optimized differently. The one beauty of the data business is, I call it, we are very recession resilient. Because, okay,
everybody needs it.
In a great time, you drive revenue.
Yeah.
In a bad time, you drive down cost. And by the way, in a bad time, you also want to manage revenue for the future. So you need data for that. And that's what we see generally helps. I see initiatives can go from growth to manage cost, or a little bit of both. So, and different industries are in different places right now.
But can you get all the workers you need?
That is definitely, I think, is a challenge that all of us face. Although, having said that, I do believe that where the economy is right now, the second half of this year will actually stabilize a lot of things.
You do?
Yeah, I think, because look, I mean, when economy starts looking shaky, the attrition always goes down. People get settled, people want comfort, people want safety. So our goal has always been, hey, we are a platform company, multi-product company. Help. We give a lot more opportunities for people to come and do innovative work. And I do see that across the board when I talk to my peers. It was really a difficult time for everybody, but I think it'll become very different in the second half.
Before we let you go, just in 30 seconds, you've been with Informatica for quite a while. Well, it was a public company then when it was taken private, now taking it public again just a few months ago. What's the main difference in the company now when it was private?
What do you prefer?
We were a single product on-premise license company. Today, we are a multi-product cloud-native platform company. We have a much bigger TAM. We only sell subscription and we are cloud native. And the biggest thing I'll show you is that we were a less than $50 million subscription ARR company in 6 years ago. This year we've guided to $1 billion in subscription ARR.
Change.
So it's the biggest startup that got created within an existing company, and that's what we're proud of.
So public, private, do you have a preference?
Well, you know, there can be days.
Well,
today the shares are higher, so probably a good day to be on a public company.
Indeed.
Amit Walia, thank you so much, and thanks for hosting us here at Informatica World. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for coming.
The CEO of Informatica.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic. on Bloomberg Radio.
Shares of Facebook, Meta, by the way, up more than 1%. This as the company has wrapped up its annual shareholder meeting today. A flurry of headlines, including one where Mark Zuckerberg of Meta, Facebook, says that Reels is a top priority for company, which leads us so well to a story in the upcoming new issue of Bloomberg Businessweek out tomorrow.
Yeah, the story written by Brad Stone and Sarah Friar. Sarah Friar is big tech team leader for Bloomberg News. She's also the author of the fantastic book, No Filter, The Inside Story of Instagram. Sarah joins us this afternoon on the phone from San Francisco. Also with us is Joel Weber, the editor of Bloomberg Businessweek. He's in the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio back in New York. Joel, I want to start with the news that I learned in this piece, that Instagram's co-founder, Kevin Systrom, just a few years ago, it's urged that Facebook bosses buy an app called Musical.ly that ultimately became TikTok. They passed on it, and now you have TikTok stealing a lot of thunder, especially when it comes to younger consumers that Facebook's Instagram wants.
Yeah, that was a really juicy little tidbit from inside the world that is now Meta. And, you know, I think if you zoom back and kind of think about what's made Meta, Meta, how meta is that? It was obviously Facebook's relentless acquisitions and innovations. And a lot of those innovations were actually kind of copycat efforts. And sometimes that went really well if you kind of think about what some of the features that were built into Instagram and the filters and sort of that snap vibe. It really allowed them to kind of like overcome the competition that they once had with Snap. And on the other side, they've had a few things that have floundered. So it's not like that strategy that has kind of helped Facebook reach 3 billion people around the world always works, but they have ran up against a competitor the likes of which they have not really had this much of an existential dread about, and that competitor is TikTok. And part of what makes TikTok go so well and has taken off during the pandemic is that and its ability to capture this youth culture is this algorithm that really surfaces people who maybe have never even used the platform before, and it harnesses
it's like a drug.
It's this drug, and there's this sense of discovery. And when you tap into what Facebook has, it maybe doesn't feel the same. And the as Facebook here tries to pivot into the metaverse, Reels is the Instagram product that Sarah Friar has written about here. Meta is putting a ton of weight on Reels, this feature within Instagram, to be the thing that takes on TikTok. How is that going so far, Sarah?
Well, it's really a big gamble. I mean, what they're doing here, it's hard to oversee how much is changing Instagram. Instagram came to prominence based on its aspirational lifestyle photography. You know, the stuff you would go and you'd scroll and you'd see people on their vacations or having their nice meals. This Reels experience is all video, short form video, and they're forcing it into every user's feed. So when you scroll through those nice photos, you're going to get these videos with sound, right? And if you click on them, you're in Reels. You can't. It's like hard to get out of it. I've watched people try this and just get really confused of like, okay, what's happening to Instagram? And it might even get more redesigned in that direction. You might eventually open Instagram and it's all these short form videos, basically essentially TikTok. So it's not just that they're trying to copy TikTok, it's that they are basically completely reinventing Instagram in the process because they're so desperate to bring back that teen demographic, which Zuckerberg sees as the future. I mean, these people, they develop their habits and they have their habits. They have their community. They've established it. And he wants them to be establishing it on his platforms. And Instagram is it's become like his Swiss Army knife for the teen demographic, which has made Instagram incredibly confusing and packed with features. And, it's a risk. It's a big risk because it's such an important property. It's the main revenue driver for Facebook. The main revenue growth driver, I should say, and they're risking it to bet the farm on becoming TikTok.
Walk us through that confusion that users are confronted with when they now launch Instagram, which used to be this well curated, square boxed, a platform, right? And you could curate it, and it was awesome and very simple. What does it look like now, and what could it become? Because you have some interesting reporting on that.
Well, I mean, the way I describe it in the story, it's like you're cruising through a quiet art gallery, and you turn the corner, and you're in a dance party. It can be very jarring. If you're in a mode of silence, images, and then you go into sound, your brain is just working differently. And so I think that what people come to Instagram for, people have spent more than a decade curating who they follow on Instagram. Now when you go to Instagram, the top thing you are going to get is suggestions. Your feed is going to become full of stuff that you didn't say you wanted, and a lot of it is going to be experimental and not based on what you've been following before. And that's a huge bet for Facebook at large. They want to become more about discovery. For the last 14 years since the invention of the newsfeed, they've been really good at showing you what they already know you want to see. Now it's about showing you stuff that you never even knew you wanted to see, which TikTok is really good at and Facebook is really not yet.
Sarah, these platforms are nothing without the people who use them, without the people who create the content. You spoke to some influencers who have done pretty well on TikTok. What's Instagram doing to try to court them, and is it working?
Well, the number one thing that matters to these content creators right now is money. So if Instagram says, listen, our algorithm is only going to show people your content if you're making reels, they're going to make reels because they have to. This is their livelihood, but they're not going to like it necessarily. And so I spoke with a bunch of creators who said, listen, like, they got me here. I have to make reels or else. But it's not the same. Like, I'm not connecting with my audience the way I used to. And, I just wonder what happens when that money pot dries up and they're not, they have to feed the creators. They have to create a culture around it. When you go and talk to somebody on the street, they're not going to know necessarily what reels is. They know what Instagram is. They know what Facebook is. They know what TikTok is, but it's a confusing thing to describe to regular people because they're not part of this creator world. These influencers, these people who create this content, they are the ones that are driving the culture, and Instagram needs to prove that it can create new stars on Instagram through this strategy, not just keep the old ones riding it out until a new platform comes along.
Well, another great deep dive for me, Sarah, in understanding certainly this world and Meta and Facebook. Sarah Friar, Big Tech team leader at Bloomberg, and Jill Weber, the editor of Business Week.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Live at Informatica World 2022 in Vegas. And, McKinsey noted earlier this year, I think at the end of last year, they talked about financial data created or used throughout the life cycle of financial services. We know financial data, Tim, it's constantly about accumulation of it, making sure that there's security in the use of it, but also increasingly making sure that when it comes to the financial markets, risk off, thinking about those factors.
Right, and then taking that data and making sense of it. Well, that's where Peter Koo, Vice President and Chief Financial Strategist at Informatica, comes in. He's with us on site at Informatica World. Peter, how are you?
Great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing pretty well.
Good.
To help us understand what the environment looks like right now from a financial services perspective, because you're the guy out there working with financial services companies to help them make sense of their data.
Financial services is obviously a heavy producer of data. They also consume it as well. But data is just really a byproduct of the interactions and transactions, a part of the industry. What we're seeing from our customers, whether it's wealth management, banks, the insurance industry, they need to grow the business. They need to identify ways and opportunities to make money off of their existing customers. They also need to provide better customer experience. At the same time, they're dealing with all the regulations that we know about. And when a new regulation comes about, the old ones don't go away. Mm. The regulators
it
need more.
It just gets layer and layer and
it's
layer.
A layer.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
And the regulators are not only just demanding good reports. They're asking, what data did you use? Where did it come from? How was it produced? Et cetera. We talk about risk management. I mean, look at the world today with geopolitical risks, climate change, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Organizations really need to have a better handle of the information that they need in order to monitor as well as ensure that they are reporting their risk positions accurately. And then at the end of the day, organizations have to be more agile than ever. When time equals money and you have to respond to a threat or an opportunity, no longer can organizations rely on day-old data. It has to be real-time. Oh. All right. So these are the macro-level business drivers that's fueling investments in data governance, data management, all the things that Informatica is doing. But keep in mind also, we live in a world where data privacy is no longer a byproduct of IT. It's front and center. It's a board-level discussion. We've seen GDPR setting mandates here in the U.S. with CCPA mm-hmm. and CRPA. What we're now seeing is that organizations...
And that's all about transparency and increased reporting and really tracking everything when it comes
it's
to trades.
Protecting,
it came out of the financial crisis.
It did. And it's also protecting information about our customers, our employees. Not only is it bad business practice not to do so, but at the end of the day, reputations can be impacted forever.
What I want to ask you about, Peter, when it comes to the financial community, and I think about Bloomberg, we're so familiar with the just tons and tons of data and then putting it to use and making it productive. But it's also about securing it, right, and making sure it is safe, it's mm-hmm. protected, but it's also something that helps your top and bottom line, your mm-hmm. data collection. So the financial community, you know, often has done so much in-house. Now we're talking about, right, the profusion of the cloud. Mm-hmm. How do you guys adapt to that and meet their needs?
So we've seen
and meet their concerns?
There's a huge paradigm shift that's occurred in the financial services industry in the last decade. When you talked about cloud computing 10 years ago, people were like, I don't know if I want to have my client
data.
What is
this cloud?
Exactly.
Right?
You know, is it literally software as a service? Is it infrastructure as a service, et cetera, et cetera? And it's all of the above. Organizations want to ensure that they're agile, that they can expand when they need to. And it's less about having your own data centers, your own people. I can subscribe to analytics from AWS. I can go out and purchase Salesforce as mm-hmm. my CRM solution. But the challenge is that you have more data that's being proliferated in the cloud. And those old systems that still remain on-premise, they're not going away. So you have to ensure that you can manage and govern all that data bidirectionally and that you have transparency and visibility as to what data is being created or consumed in the cloud.
Can you give us an example when you look out at the landscape? Because you've been doing this for a long time. What does the next 5 years look like in terms of what a regular person would experience when they interact with financial services as a result of the analysis of data? Like, what will they be able to do differently because you can crunch those numbers?
Well, to your question, the average consumer, you know, we talk about and we hear about artificial intelligence and machine learning.
Right, in the context of credit checks and those sorts of things.
But here, you know, we see robo-advisor technologies leveraging AI technologies.
Yeah.
The ability to actually provide the level of service that a human being can, I don't think will ever get replaced by technology in itself, but it's helping, right? And it's allowing organizations to be more connected and integrated to not just the consumer through their mobile app or on their website, but as part of their daily lives. And what we're going to see is more people and consumers really looking at their financial institutions as a partner for life rather mm-hmm. than just a transactional relationship. And data and information is going to be required in order for these firms to provide the level of service and expectations that their customers demand.
Just got about a minute left. I have to ask you, because we've spent so much time talking about ESG, and you do feel like mm-hmm. we're coming to this moment of reckoning where people, regulators, we saw it come out of Davos, mm-hmm. you know, asking for some oversight, some metrics so that we can really understand what it's about. How can you guys help with that process? And again, just about 50 seconds.
So a lot of data that you have to deal with, collect, integrate from third parties and so forth.
But it has to be open source, right?
It can be, but the thing is, if you don't know what data really is there, how they should use it,
right.
Where does it come from, can they trust it, you're going to find organizations suffering from the same challenges that they've been dealing with each and every day. ESG just puts another requirement on the table that's forefront. And we're going to see more and more organizations realizing that they have to do something about the way they manage and govern data. They can't rely on the people that they have mm-hmm. and the old technologies. This is the time for the financial services industry to innovate. And that's what Informatica is doing.
All right. Really fun. I feel like we scratched the surface. There's
I know.
Much going on. So hopefully we can maybe talk to you again in the future.
Perfect. I'd love to.
Because there's so much going on here.
Great.
Certainly. Peter Koo, he's Vice President, Chief Financial Strategist at Informatica here at Informatica World 2022.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at QuickBooks.com/5APY.
Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Earlier this year, Grandview Research came out, Tim, and they noted that the cloud computing market size forecast to be worth about $1.5 trillion by 2030 with a compound annual growth rate of nearly 16%. A lot of demand, and it's leading to innovation.
Well, let's ask what type of innovation it's leading to. Jitesh Ghai is Executive Vice President and Chief Product Officer at Informatica. He's here with us on site in Vegas. He oversees product management, user experience, design, engineering, and cloud operations. Jitesh, good to have you with us. How are you?
I am well. Very busy, but great to be here.
Well, talk a little bit about how the cloud is evolving, because
I thought you were going to say, why are you so busy?
Well, I mean, if you think it's interesting. I believe the first mention of the cloud from Informatica was, 15 years ago, all the way back in 2006.
Yes, we've been around and we've been leading the market with many, many innovations and generations of data and analytics on premises as well as in the cloud. There were data warehouses and data marts. Then there was this thing called big data and Hadoop, and now all of it's in the cloud, and we're powering all of it.
You know, I think from a layperson, I remember the Bloomberg story when they talked about if you were streaming from Amazon,
yeah,
web services,
right,
you were getting something from the cloud.
If you were using Netflix, you were actually using an Amazon product.
Exactly, and
right.
We started learning about stream, you know, in terms of the cloud and like how all of that was happening. Talk to us in terms of how the cloud continues to evolve and how we are using it.
Yeah, you know, the cloud first started with, I'm just going to deploy some servers and make it easy for people to put their applications on those servers. That was called IaaS. Then it became, well, I'm just going to build applications. You don't even have to worry about installing them. They're just applications. That's the whole SaaS moniker. All of it is driving agility.
Software as a service. For
exactly.
Those who are listening.
Exactly. Yeah. Software as a service. All of that is driving agility. All of that's driving it, making it easier for organizations to get the benefit of technology without having to install it, without having to manage it, and getting the latest, most innovative technology, because as technology providers, we're rolling out innovations on a monthly basis in the cloud. What we're doing is now powering data for organizations in the cloud. What we're doing is we're enabling organizations to drive their data, their analytics, their reporting as a service.
What are you hearing from these organizations in terms of what they want right now and what they expect? In 2022, what do they expect from analysis in the cloud?
Yeah, so the big problem and the amazing opportunity for us is there's literally zettabytes of data.
What is this? What, contextualize that
exactly,
for us.
Exactly.
I'm guessing a lot of zeros.
A lot of zeros, and the important part is only about 4-5% of it is being used and delivering value. Data volumes keep growing, and the opportunity to derive insights is in analyzing as much data as you can. The opportunity to deliver a cross-sell, upsell, promotional offer for an organization is based on hyper-personalization. It's based on how much data you have. It's based on the AI you're using against that data to make intelligent recommendations based on your buying preferences, on your buying preferences, and on my buying preferences. And that comes down to trusted data. That's what we deliver.
Are organizations increasingly thinking about my data dossier, Tim's data dossier, your data dossier? And, I mean, obviously very valuable, but then kind of who is the ownership of that, and then how do you use that going forward?
And a key element of trusted data is ensuring privacy,
yeah,
ensuring
yeah.
that the right data is used for the right purposes with the right consent. And that's an important that we have four journeys that we empower for our customers. These are digital transformation journeys around analytics and AI,
mm-hmm.
empowering their analytics initiatives, their AI, artificial intelligence initiatives, as well as around application integration and intelligent automation of business processes within the organization, what's referred to as digital. And then there's enabling them to transform their supply chains, enabling them to transform their customer experiences, enabling them to go digital and bring their products, and enabling us to shop for these products in e-commerce experiences.
Something that became so much in the demand, if you think about the last 2 years between pandemic and supply chain snarls.
That is exactly right. That is exactly right. And to continue that thread, the last journey that's extremely important is data governance and privacy, making sure that we're enabling the consumption of this data within the Global 2000 and beyond, but with governance and the appropriate policies to consume.
Jitesh, we only have about 30, 40 seconds here. You have a degree in electrical engineering. My father was an electrical engineer. Are we producing enough engineers in society for the demand that's really needed? Just your thoughts on that.
We could always use more engineers. My father's an engineer. I'm an engineer. I'd love to see more engineers. I'd like to see more diversity in engineers as well, both from a demographic, geographic, as well as from a gender standpoint.
We do have a little bit of extra time with you, so I just want to get an idea of how it is attracting and retaining talent right now, especially with regard to, I mean, it's interesting because we've talked a lot about, in recent weeks, hiring freezes in Silicon Valley, startups not being in an environment that they were in over the last few years where they're just flush with cash as venture capitalists tighten their belt. Mm-hmm. Are you starting to see it's actually easier to attract and retain talent, or is it still really hard for you to build out these teams?
It's an extremely competitive environment, but you know what I do want to emphasize is I'm hiring, so please, if there are talented looking, please visit our website and our career services page. I'm definitely looking.
That's a really
talent.
Notable thing to hear right now, because yeah. We're hearing across the industry of hiring freezes, rescinded offers at Twitter, for example.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was just over in Panama, and we did a big conference from Bloomberg Live and talking with the chief operating officer of dLocal. And she said one of the things that I said, what could we do to help entrepreneurship, the creation of unicorns and technology, you know, around the world? And she said, we just need to be better in terms of education and
yes.
steering a younger population. And she's talked specifically about engineering.
Yes. I couldn't – well, STEM in general, driving innovation.
One thing I wanted to ask you about in terms of just going back to data, because we talked earlier about on the broadcast about data dump, and data isn't useful unless you can work through it, make it productive. You guys think a lot about having this 360 degree of data. When we say something like that, what does that mean?
Well, there's 360 degree views to deliver context around data. Otherwise, it's just numbers,
right.
words. There's Jitesh. Well, Jitesh is what? A person. There's context about Jitesh. Well, Jitesh is chief product officer at Informatica. That's now context. Jitesh has an electrical engineering degree. That's context. Jitesh enjoys hiking on the weekends with his two young boys. That's context. That's now building a 360 view. Jitesh has these buying preferences. Jitesh enjoys making oat milk lattes on the weekends. These are all...
it's kind of like a dating profile, I'm just going to say.
Well,
just kidding.
there's professional 360 views. And what do you do with those 360 views? Well, if you're in the wealth management business, you understand their investment profile. You have householding information. You understand who their relationships are. You understand what could be interesting cross-sell, upsell opportunities to offer investment products, mortgage products. You have a question.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, how do these 360 degree views, how do they follow you from one platform to another platform? How do they allow a mortgage broker to reach you, but also somebody outside of financial services,
like
for example?
It's very open source, it feels like.
No. So what we're doing is we're helping an individual organization empower itself with its own data. So we're not enabling organization. We're not delivering data to an organization. We're helping every enterprise creates its own data. We're helping them harness the power of that data, helping them organizing it, and helping them make it productive.
Do you envision a time when we as consumers have our own data and we're somehow in the blockchain,
yeah.
the context of the blockchain, and we can travel with that data where we want?
It's an interesting question. You have rights to your data today under GDPR, CCPA. These are privacy regulations, California's as well as the European Union. You have rights to go to an organization and ask for, how are you using my data and can you give it to me? And can you not use my data for sales and marketing purposes? That exists today. As to whether it resides in a blockchain in the future and you can carry it with you, it's an interesting question. I'd like to understand what the application of that. I'd rather others have some understanding of my preferences to make my experiences productive, to make customer service and engagement for me more productive,
right,
in serving me. I certainly wouldn't want that data used for malicious purposes,
right.
And therein lies the balance. Therein lies regulations and the like.
Titesh, I have to say, coming to this event and reading in and doing a bunch of research, one of the things that I always find interesting, and there's a function on the Bloomberg that you basically can put a company in and you can find out who their suppliers are and then who their customers are. And what's interesting is you guys work with everybody who's big in the cloud, whether it's AWS, whether it's Microsoft, whether it's Google. What are some of the conversations you're having with these people about kind of what their demands are and where the cloud and where data is going?
Yeah.
Because they are such big aggregators of information.
Correct, correct. And that's why we have deep partnerships with them and they have deep partnerships with us, is while they are aggregating information on behalf of their enterprise customers, which are also our enterprise customers, we are helping them aggregate that information. We're helping them on-ramp that information into AWS, Azure, GCP, Oracle, which we just announced today, the Oracle Cloud as well.
Yeah, and it makes them have the ability to use it. We have to run. Jitesh, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Really,
happy to be here.
Really appreciate Jitesh Guy. He's Chief Product Officer at Informatica.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
We're live in Las Vegas at Informatica World, and our next guest is part of the team over at Freddie Mac. They are responsible for more than 11 million active loans, a balance sheet of over $2.1
trillion. That's it?
That's it.
Okay.
It's a lot of information and data to keep track of and also to keep secure.
Here with more is Arvind Jagannathan, Vice President and Chief Data Officer at the government-sponsored enterprise of GSE. It is, of course, Freddie Mac, yes, here on site at Informatica World in Las Vegas. Jag, good to chat with you. How are you?
Doing great. Really appreciate being here.
Well, let's talk. I mean, there's so much that we want to get to with you, but you're the Chief Data Officer. You have such a unique insight into the health of the U.S. economy, the health of the housing market. I want to start there and get an idea from you of and look, you, with the, you know, with the caveat, you are not an economist, but what does the landscape look like to you right now?
You see a lot of data, though.
You see a lot. So in terms of, you think about transformation and looking at data going to the cloud, ultimately, you know, when you look at what we're trying to achieve in terms of being successful in our mission.
Yeah.
The increase of demand that you're seeing in the last couple of years, and you look forward in the ever-changing economy, requires us in terms of how we want to modernize, take advantage of the cloud, and look at in terms of meeting our mission. So in terms of understanding the data without going into all the various points, but if you think about it from our first quarter results, right? 882,000 people we were able to either buy, rent, mm-hmm, or refinance a home. $223 billion liquidity came. You know, we were able to provide. Of which, in terms of what I just mentioned, in terms of the first-time home buyers, 50% were first-time, right? Mm-hmm. Of which 52% met our affordable, our goals. So, if you think about what's happening with the economy, housing is still, right? You're seeing demand, and think about increasing. So, if you look at that, I think closer to $3 trillion in terms of assets.
Yeah.
Right? We were able to, the demand is requiring us to be more nimble, right? As well as in terms of making sure that we're meeting our mission that make home possible for everyone.
Well, that's the interesting point. And this is, you know, some of the conversations that we had with the CEO of Informatica, and just kind of a theme woven throughout is that there's data and then there's smart data, right?
Yeah.
You guys want to make sure you've got a mission. You do want to make sure that the money and the assistance is getting to the people who really, really need it. And that's where data can come in, right, to find that you're getting it to the right home buyers.
Yeah. So,
or potential home buyers.
Yeah. So if you think about how technology is changing, right, ultimately we're going to realize how to be more nimble. What's it going to do to that borrower or lender experience? What's it going to do from a servicing standpoint? it's going to continue to evolve. Where we're trying to figure out is how do we continue to move the needle to make more home ownership, whether it be on the multifamily or the single family side,
right,
affordable and accessible, right? That's the that's where the mission is really tying into.
What is the data that you're looking at now that you're able to aggregate, that you're able to analyze, that you're able to make sense of that you weren't able to do, let's say, 5-10 years ago? Give us specific examples of what you have the power to do now and then how that translates into the home buying experience.
Great. So if you think about origination and you think about 5-10 years ago, things were much more siloed in terms of processes, right? So if you think people process technology. So as I talk about the culture change, so how do we, in terms of loan origination, as they're changing and evolving, how can we, if you think about our rep and warrant relief, that you know that's there. Before, everything was paper-driven. Now you're able, from a lender-borrower experience, able to provide that data, right, for them to make decisions in a more quicker manner. We thought about reimagining our entire servicing portfolio, the
right.
background. That has been something because we were investing and looking at in terms of the front end, the borrower experience, but then also the servicing side, because that's how people, when you think about a 30-year mortgage,
right.
they're dealing with the servicers. So we've done various activities and products, right, to help improve that side of the business as well.
How did the pandemic impact you guys in terms of your approach and your use of data or analytics or the cloud or the stuff that, you know, all the technology that Informatica provides?
No, great question. On a personal level, I look at it in terms of, I mean, think about COVID, March 2020, Friday the 13th, take your laptop, you don't know if you're going to come back, and guess what?
It was our last show in studio.
Yeah, you didn't come back.
Our last guest in studio.
What you see in the last couple of years is accessible, having data more accessible became key, right? Because people were now virtual.
Yeah.
So before, hey, I can come by your desk, hey, can you print me out something? Or can you give me... They wanted more dashboards. How do you get data to be more consolidated so that for those reporting you're able to meet? The speed to market, demand increased.
Right.
So in COVID, clearly there was a dip, but then you saw housing and everyone else. So that fostered not only transformation in every aspect of our business line.
One thing I do want to ask you, though, because you guys had an incredible surge during the pandemic, right, when all of a sudden everybody was like, I'm moving. I'm buying houses out. And so
I need a backyard.
I need a backyard, and I need extra space. How does it compare to what you are seeing? You talked about some of the volumes that you guys are just seeing as of late, but how does it compare? Are things slowing down? I mean, we've seen it with the rise in mortgage rates. So I'm just curious, in terms of the data processing, are you seeing it slow down a little bit?
I mean, again, in terms of, again, from a data perspective, I'll let... more the economists and
but are you processing less?
No, it's not so much even processing less. I think what we're seeing is that being efficient, making sure that we can meet our mission, being successful in terms of making home possible is critical today as it was 2 years ago.
Do you have data that gives you an informed view of how hot the housing market is and how much it could slow down because mortgage rates are increasing?
No, great question again. We'll provide those data to, I call our key executives and business owners. My job from a CDO standpoint is make sure those reports and the data is accurate and they can rely on the information. And From a governance perspective, and this is where Informatica is critical for us, that we know our data is protected and governed effectively, and then the reportings are accurate.
Well, and one thing we talked with Amit about, Amit Walia, the CEO of Informatica, that your position, the chief data officer, it's like how important the CFO became after the financial crisis. How often is it that you are drawn into strategy because of your understanding and use of data in just got about 25 seconds?
Yeah. So being in the business line, fortunate that our strategy has a clear line of sight to our strategic framework and our mission. And very, very, very fortunate for that.
Jack, thank you so much. I'm so glad we got to look at this side of the discussions that we're having today. Arvind Jagannathan, he's VP, Chief Data Officer over at Freddie Mac.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's going to drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, just about 10 minutes left in today's trading session. We're just off our highs of the session, a big day when we got those FOMC minutes from that latest Fed meeting. And we've got a great guest to talk about the trends that we've been seeing, Tim.
Great to have back with us Anne Mileti, head of active equity at Allspring Global Investments. Allspring Global Investments has about $541 billion in assets under management. Anne joining us once again on the phone from Milwaukee. Anne, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing well. It's good to have you with us. And it's interesting to see the trade today, especially after we got those Fed meeting minutes. Thanks to our producers here at Bloomberg Business Week, we know that you write that we're in the midst of a paradigm shift, which is creating a lot of volatility and discomfort for investors. So it raises the question, what are the opportunities in this paradigm shift?
Yeah, Tim, it's a great question because it's really hard for investors to stay focused on opportunity when there's so much dislocation going on in the market. But that is exactly what our investment teams are trained to do. They are investors, not traders. And so they're focused on process and looking for companies that can sustain this kind of change. So really good, strong fundamentals. And they're seeing it across all different industries. It's really a time to kind of look at those key companies. It's you know, company fundamentals are truly the key point right now.
Yeah, you know what, Anne, you do see that, right? And we've seen it play out as earnings have been reported. There are some companies that seem to weather it through, and investors look at the fundamentals, and they'll be bidding a stock up in a down market. What, Tim?
Or Dara Khosrowshahi of Uber comes out and says, forget about adjusted EBITDA. We're all about free cash flow now.
Yeah, well, the metrics keep on changing. So, you know, Anne, and I know I say this to a fair amount of our market guests, but we've seen a lot of different market cycles. This is an unusual one, right, where we are recovering from so much liquidity that was pumped into the markets very, very quickly and provided incredible support and a lot of money chasing a lot of assets to all of a sudden it's now kind of quickly going away, it feels like. So what's the advice for investors? What do you draw upon historically, you know, or technically to kind of give them guidance?
Yeah, it's so important to look at historical perspective and to think about it just exactly the way you set that up, because it is a paradigm shift. We have gone from the low inflation, low rate environment, and that's changing. In the first stage of that, really, you typically see a lot of dislocation in the market. Then you see some capitulation. We're seeing a little bit of that, maybe a little bit more to go. And then you start to see the recovery happen. And I think where we're looking is, again, company by company, but we do see opportunities. If you look at the spreads, historical spreads, they're kind of getting to your point, between large cap and small cap are really blown out, and you're getting opportunities in small cap companies, I would say, present themselves pretty well right now. Healthcare is another area.
Because of their domestic, again, because of the domestic exposure, Anne? Because of the domestic exposure with everything that's going on in the world, or what? Or just because they were so beaten down?
Yeah, I mean, typically in inflationary cycles, you start to see a little bit more pressure on smaller cap companies, but it's the small cap companies that are not as set up, I think, for change. And so if you look at really strong fundamentals within small caps, you see great opportunity there. But yes, that's a space. They're also in some ways isolated from a lot of the global challenges that we have going on right now. But, you know, size has been important. Large cap has been where a lot of the market has flown. And I think we are comfortable looking down cap right now. There's a lot of opportunity out there. That being said, there's a lot of large cap companies where you're seeing big cap sell-offs right now too. And I think that's exactly why, rather than put a telescope on, you know, the whole market, you kind of have to take a microscope out and look at, you know, where do you look, right? Where do you look within small cap? Well, where do you look within large cap? And within each sector as well.
Fundamental research actually matters,
well, where
right?
Where do you look in those places? What sectors are exciting to you?
Yeah, well, I think one of the sectors that does stand out to me is healthcare. One, it tends to be, you know, a little bit more defensive in inflationary cycles, which you could argue we are in the midst of. And, you know, it underperformed last year substantially. It still is fairly, you know, underrepresented, I would say, in terms of holdings that many, many professional investors have. So I would say healthcare is an attractive area. And outside of that, I would just do the bottom-up work and focus on fundamentals. And I think that is different, again, in this paradigm shift where rising seas lifted all boats. I think the tide's going down, and there's going to be more differentiation across each company.
You know, it's interesting, too, and I was thinking about when we saw Snap drop like a rock this week, and our Mandeep Singh said, you know, at some point you look at this and say, this is a company with, what, over 300 million in terms of subscribers. Like, there is value there. And I do wonder, you know, and I know you focus on sectors when you come on with us. I mean, is there some point that you look at that big tech, and just got about 30 seconds here, that you say there are opportunities here, especially with these beaten down names?
Absolutely. Technology is changing and transforming the world, and we all know that, and companies are going to continue to spend on technology, not just us individually. So tech is not an area I would stay away from. However, there's a lot of dislocation between the big, you know, kind of seven FANG names and what their valuations have done versus the rest of technology. So, again, I would just be selective.
All right. Well, always fun to check in with you. Anne Mulledy, she's head of active equity over at Allspring Global Investments. They've got roughly $541 billion in assets under management. Joining us on the phone from Milwaukee.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum, powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.